welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map, and today my guest is Kim Rath, founder and CEO of Topple. Topple is building a huge blockchain network to track impact from diamond sourcing to carbon footprint. Kim, who just finished her PhD and master's at Rice University, has officially transitioned into the CEO role and can speak to the challenges and opportunities she faces leading a startup during the crisis caused by COVID-19. Kim, thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, Natalie. It's good to be here.
So I know it's kind of a crazy time, so I appreciate you joining me virtually versus in the studio. But I want to talk to you, especially since you have recently transitioned to CEO of Topple. So congratulations, and tell me a little bit about what that transition has been like.
Thank you. It's been a long time coming. A few of us founders, we have sat around and talked about this for a while. One of the things that most people that are from Houston and know me, I've been finishing 2 degrees simultaneously while doing all of Topple. So I was finishing up my PhD in statistics and my master's in economics while raising our round last year. And so one of the things I wanted to do is just finish up the PhD, which is what happened in January. Mm-hmm. So I defended my PhD in early January. And that was kind of a time when the three of us sat down and we just said and reevaluated our strengths and weaknesses as a team, as a founding team, me, James, and Chris. And, you know, just had to sit down and say, let's try and think through how do we move forward now that all of us are full time. James also finished a PhD last year in atomic physics. And so now that we are all here and the business is moving very quickly, we realize that it's much better for me to take over more of the overarching strategy, team, you know, raising. We're actually going into another raise during this unprecedented times. And then for Chris to focus on the customer, because he's just brilliant on our customers, and James to keep on focusing on the technology as CTO. And so, yeah, it was definitely a cool experience as founders to go through together. But I'm glad that all three of us came out very excited about what we're doing and what we're going to be doing going forward. So, yeah.
I definitely think that's something that takes a lot of self-awareness to kind of sit down all together and regroup like that. And it's something a lot of startups, you know, will eventually have to do. So it's kind of cool to see how that came about. And before we get, I want to talk a little bit more about Topple's growth, but before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about what your company actually does, because I know people might not be familiar with really the cool technology you've created. So give me the highlights.
Yeah, so Topple's building a technology. We're an impact technology company, as we call ourselves, and we're building a blockchain to help businesses prove their ethical and sustainable practices. And so that's what we've been doing for the last 2 years. We have customers everywhere from chocolates moving from bean to bar. We have diamonds moving from mine to marriage. And we have, you know, various different, so that's on the supply chain side. And then more on the impact side, we have, for instance, a carbon credit platform using the Topple blockchain to prove whether you have what your carbon footprint looks like. And so you change the world, we'll help you prove it. And that's kind of how the technology works. But yeah, we've, as you said, like growth is definitely something we can talk about, but that's where we started very differently and transitioned into where we are now, which is very much focused on track and tracing and helping businesses move things from source to sale. And yeah, it's exciting. We have a lot of different traction in very different places in the world. And yeah.
So what, I know you're growing both in your team, and you've just recently closed your seed round last fall, and now apparently are working on another one in this trying time. But for kind of perspective, what avenues have you grown the blockchain technology? I know way back when the original story I wrote was kind of focused on the diamond aspect of how you can track back the diamond ring that you're wearing to, you know, where it was mined, which is incredible and really cool from a consumer's perspective. So what else are you now able to track with the platform?
So talking about diamonds, so I actually have the Kim Stone on my finger.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so this stone came from literally, I know its birthday, I know exact day it was came out of the earth. I watched it travel all the way to here and I could see the jeweler making it, just like you track your pizza. I could see everything from source to sale. So yes, that is still going very strong. And we have seen mostly what we've seen is kind of two spaces, two of the bigger spaces, the agriculture, more sustainable and ethical agriculture. We've seen a lot of traction on that side. And then the carbon markets. So there's definitely a big move with, even if you think about what's being highlighted through the COVID-19 and everything, is very much the how are we taking care of the planet? How are we storing carbon? How are we thinking through clean energy in general? And so that is something that we've seen pick up a lot. But one of the bigger things that Topple's kind of seen is an opportunity to go through like lessons learned by the customers that we've seen come to us to ask for various different types of services, like be it, you know, let's build a platform that tracks their fair wages from source to sale. Like, let's think through like which farmer was paid, what, when, how, for how much. And so those types of things we've seen evolve. So like, for instance, with the farmer case, right? So now you might be tracking the farmer's good from source to sale, but how do you benefit the farmer to the in the opposite direction? Not just, hey, now the brand can ask a leverage premium for that product. Let's think back about how we can use the information and the history that this farmer is now collecting about their productivity to think through. So one of the projects newest projects we're doing is in Zambia with a group called Katina, and they work with Paycode, which is a mobile payment application. And so what we're doing there is how do we integrating the two platforms to allow micro loans to those farmers using these tracking histories of the goods moving from source to sale. So now the farmer also benefits from the history that has been recorded for consumer purposes. And the brands want to show provable results and claims. They want to prove their claims. But at the same time, now these farmers have an opportunity to have access to financing that they never had access before, because they don't have bank access. They are being paid by mobile wallets for, you know, they don't have any financial institutions in these areas. And now for the first time, they also have access to financing. So there's this bi-directional movement that we have always envisioned, but had not have, like we weren't there yet last year. So mm-hmm. moving the financing in the opposite direction is definitely something we're very excited about.
So how exactly are you introduced to these new ways that Topple's blockchain technology can be used? Is it pretty much just by word of mouth, by kind of clients being satisfied with what you've been able to do for them?
So, yeah, I would say that the lessons learned come from, one thing I can say, I definitely think we found a product market fit. Mm-hmm. And with that comes the customers are informing the changes in the technology, like the micro changes. So they're not macro changes. The core technology stays exactly the same. Mm-hmm. It's just the type of tools we're enabling using that core technology. And so I would say one of the things we had seen last year was very much how do we onboard quicker? You know, let's think through like, how do we get people to use the Topple blockchain much quicker than building out the full development platform and so forth, right? And so some of the changes were informed by exactly that, where some of our customers were saying we would be more than willing to pay, you know, a SaaS fee, like a subscription fee to a very generic platform. Mm-hmm. And use it for a while and then think through, you know, building out their own version or their own piece mm-hmm. of the pie, right? And so building out their own full application, essentially. So those are things that we customer informed things that mm-hmm. I was always told that this is true, right? That businesses learn from their customers. Yeah. And it's definitely evident in what we've been doing and evolving. And I think this is also a big benefit about being a blockchain company that is an application specific blockchain and not just, you know, building blockchain here underneath the world. And then the world needs to try and access it, but it has no clue how to access it. Mm-hmm. And us being, you know, very much integrated to the surface, that you know exactly how you can access the Topple blockchain, and it's very approachable, has been something we've transitioned to very seriously about how do you become a very application-specific blockchain for this specific impact technology space.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to talk about fundraising, because for a while there, y'all were very successfully growing with clients and just being completely bootstrapped. And then first fund raising your seed round in the fall, and now onto your, is it another seed or a series A?
Yeah, so we actually closed our round right at the end of summer last year. And so now we're going into this next raise very much. It was very funny because last year we were raising, you know, if you think about the spring last year, mm-hmm. it was referred to as like the blockchain crypto winter. Yeah. So we were actually going and raising during a time where most people were not making blockchain investments.
Yeah.
And so successfully oversubscribed to a million. And then with that now transitioning into another, it will be more an institutional seed round. That was mostly angels. All of them were sophisticated or strategic angel investors in our last round. And so this is very much our first institutional round. Mm-hmm. And so we're going out to, we're currently still working on some of the fundraising strategy. We'll probably open around mid-April. We are going out to raise somewhere between 3.5 and 5 million. So within that raise right now, it's very much us looking at COVID-19 and thinking through where does 3.5 million put us. It gives us about 18 months of runway without revenues, and puts us at a very comfortable metric to hit about a million in revenue at that point, so that we can go into a bigger Series A after that point. And so we're kind of positioning ourselves to say, if this is an institutional seed round, let's get ourselves to a million in revenue so that we can raise a much bigger Series A instead of raising a Series A now and a much smaller Series A now and having to hit the Series B metric in the near future.
So kind of this, your financial and venture capital strategy, what will that, all of this money kind of go toward? What's your bigger picture vision for the company for the next couple of years?
Yeah, so one of the biggest things that we, which has helped actually with the transition, is realignment to just think about our core competency being a technology company. Mm-hmm. And for us, it's a big part of, we had realized in this lessons learned that I talked about earlier, that we have an opportunity to monetize more than just the blockchain, but also the tooling on top of the blockchain, which has been very beneficial during this time that path to profitability will be much more necessary, like especially with companies having pulled back CapEx and are going to sit on that money. For us to be able to say, okay, let's think rather through like repeated revenue, let's think about recurring revenue and actually using some of our tooling and monetizing some of our infrastructure so that we can have, you know, applications both by outside development groups point to the Topple blockchain and use our APIs. And so those are opportunities we had seen just this last year. Mm-hmm. So with that comes a thing of saying, okay, let's return to our core competency. And a lot of the full-time hires that will come out of this specific raise will be focused on the core technology and then building out specific application teams that are focused on more SaaS verticals that we have been able to partner with certain customers to build out four different SaaS verticals that we tap into even the SaaS revenues. So we have opportunity now to not just have transaction fees come in that's recurring. We will also have the tooling fees that come in for outside development, and then the SaaS revenues for the shared platforms that we're building. And so now we have three streams of revenue that has moved in from last year. We were at one stream of revenue opportunity. So I would say like that's one of the biggest things, is making that product offering broader and giving an opportunity to us to just say, okay, well, we did build these things, let's monetize them. Mm-hmm. But that means like focusing on core competency as a whole.
Well, in this time, I'm sure it's, you know, kind of thrown maybe a hitch in your plan for fundraising and for growth. So how are you keeping up? How's your team doing amid this kind of unprecedented time.
Yeah. So I have to say, like, things that I've learned through just being very honest with some of the VCs I talk to, and them being very honest with me as I'm fundraising, and asking questions very candidly, mm-hmm. has been extremely helpful. And with that then comes back to the team of being very transparent and honest mm-hmm. with the team of where we are, what we're going to be doing, how far do we have from a runway perspective, what does that look like? So I had a town hall meeting with the whole team on Friday, and we were very transparent on these numbers, explaining to the team what we're going to be doing if X happens, what we'll do when Y happens, and just giving some certainty in this very uncertain time. Mm-hmm. has been super helpful to the team, and they all appreciate that type of transparency. But with that comes the same thing of talking to VCs. They say always, we know as much as you know. Mm-hmm. It's not that we have more information. So what is necessary is to keep the burn low. So I brought our burn down so that we can have runway to Q4 this year, right? So that we can actually move quicker, like faster into profitability. Was one of the other things we did is say, okay, we have this opportunity to monetize our infrastructure even further right now. So those were like big pieces, is strategy related and internal operations related, making sure that we're streamlining and being more agile and changing, you know, being efficient with changes and challenges. I think that's what happened last year too, as you said. Mm-hmm. We're being bootstrapping, and you know, we've been moving in that bootstrap direction for a while. And so us just being able to be flexible, adaptable, it's not very different from my team from last year, because we also didn't know when the blockchain winter was going to stop.
Yeah.
The difference here is just it's affecting the markets too, right? So it's affecting a lot of people. And that's one of the things I think we miss sometimes, is we're trying to keep the business alive and not thinking through the people. And how do you get the people motivated? And I honestly can just say that I think transparency is the only way you can do that, because I don't know when this will end.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's been the same, like us being a team, it's going to make us stronger. If you go think about it, a bunch of companies like Airbnb and others were built in the 2008 recession. So I'm excited to see if we make it through here. I think we can survive anything.
Yeah, I've heard from some VCs that's exactly what is going to happen. I mean, you're going to have some startups really rise to the top, just being able to prove themselves during this time. But it's also going to weed out some startups, which is stressful for the many startup founders in Houston that are wondering which avenue they're going to take. So, as a founder, what if you had to list maybe your top concerns or the things that you're really focused on, what would they be? Because I'm not asking you to speak for all startup founders, but for you, what keeps you up at night, I guess, during this time?
I would say making sure that you are keeping people updated on progress, and making sure that the things that are keeping me up is mostly my people. I want to make sure that they are taken care of as much as I want to make sure that the business moves forward. And finding strategies that make those dots connect is definitely something that I spend hours on, thinking through ways in which we can still benefit our team from a growth perspective, but at the same time have the business grow too. And then the burn. I mean, like most startup founders know that, you know, cash is king, and therefore it's necessary to watch your numbers and see where you can cut and what you can cut and how you can cut. I think that's very important, but it's also at the same time, some of the very good advice I've gotten from very amazing partners from VCs is very much the question of how deep do you cut? Right? And when do you cut? And those are conversations that are worth having. And I would actually very much advise startup founders to have those conversations with a bunch of advisors and mentors on what do you need to be doing And one of the biggest things I've heard multiple times is don't cut repeatedly, cut once and cut deep, and then work from there, because that is what the strategy should be. Because if you're constantly cutting, then you're not going to be able to actually move the company forward. You're just going to be waiting for something to happen. And right now, the biggest thing is the business needs to move forward. We are in a very good advantageous position because we're a tech company that not slowed down. I have to say, like, the fact that we're sitting at home, we've actually picked up pace. So a lot of efficiency has come in through, like, the technology development side. So, I mean, it's kind of going to depend on the type of business you are. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just one of the things. We have been a very remote team. So we've been able to, you know, we had Zoom accounts and we had virtual check-ins. We had, you know, all these different things that are now being placed into meetings and being told that founders should do are things that we have already executed in as a team. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's just like general pace, but I can tell you some of my people are going stir crazy.
Yeah.
That I can tell you.
Yeah. Well, I think I made this observation, I think on the last episode, startups, at least compared to, you know, big companies, they're at a bit of an advantage because, you know, founders are very used to working remotely and being an island, especially, you know, younger companies who are just one or two, you know, founders working on the company. And so in that way, we're a little bit better off, I think, as a startup community. But yeah, we'll definitely be professional, you know, at home workers by the end of this, because we've had to be for, you know, a couple weeks now, and who knows how many more weeks. But yeah. And I think Topple is also in a very unique position because, you know, right now everyone's supply chain has a lot of question marks, and that is Topple's bread and butter is supply chain. So how, you know, how is your company kind of positioned, I guess, to observe the effect that COVID-19 has on supply chains?
Yeah, so some of the things that, you know, we always point out is trust, access, and coordination are things that blockchains are really good at solving. So access to remote locations, trust between source and sale that previously was damaged because there wasn't some relationship between that source and sale, or coordination between various parties in a supply chain. So some of the things that I'm seeing and reading about is very much the concept of supply chain shortening or single origin supply chains coming about. And those are, you know, when you are shortening a supply chain, and you don't have these players that know the market and know how to coordinate the source and the sale, what you're going to see is a trust issue. And mm-hmm. one of the biggest things is, you know, if I don't trust the source where my goods are coming from, that makes it very difficult for me to be able to pay the price that I'm willing to pay, or, you know, do anything of that effect of making sure that things are moving smoothly. Now, this is exactly what the Topple blockchain addresses, is to essentially connect the dots that were previously damaged by trust. And so where there was usually like an institution, like a bank that would, or an auditor that would essentially check whether the source is an organic product or that the source is living wage farming, those parties don't exist in a lot of these remote supply chains. And especially if you're starting to cut out and shorten supply chains, you don't necessarily have that relationship. And so what you create with a blockchain environment is a trustless environment. Mm-hmm. And so you can actually create an opportunity where we're recording the relationship between you, the source as a producer, and me. And if there's ever a question of whether this was truth, there is now a recorded tamper-proof change log between you and I, and then mitigation can happen and all of the different things. But I think that's where blockchains will come about, is helping people with increased access to, say, financing, especially as the markets go down in the rest of the, you know, developing world, you know, me being from South Africa, mm-hmm. The developing world already had its issues before the markets, before everything that's going on right now. So mm-hmm. Essentially, you know, this here we are sick, there they are starving and dying, right? Like that, like from an analogy perspective. So it is definitely highlighting some of the issues that were happening in developing areas, but still our goods come from those sources. And so how are we taking care if we come out of all of this, you know, how are these companies that are sourcing from remote areas going to be taking care of those people that they are sourcing from? And then the other question is, how do you and I know that it's going to be real? Like, they might say they're taking care of them, but how would we know that they can prove that? They don't. Like, they could make claims, they could tell us they're taking care of their workers in the middle of nowhere. We wouldn't know unless we can see visibility, you know, as a lot of this COVID-19 trackers that everyone's watching, you know, the data is being pulled into these trackers and you're constantly watching an update. Just the same way you can be tracking your chocolate, you can be tracking your diamonds, you can be tracking anything you can think about. We have a nutmeg supply chain that's moving from Indonesia to the Netherlands. The same way you can think about tracking various different types of goods around the world. And I think that's where I'm excited to see, one, the virtual and the digital side of this, right? Like, people are becoming way more digitized and realizing that you can use data to visualize a bunch of different things. And then at the same time, use data to inform decision making, which is, if that data is rubbish, right? Mm-hmm. Garbage in, garbage out. And so it's very necessary when we do have all these trackers. A lot of these COVID-19 trackers are essentially sourcing from reliable data locations. And so how are we creating reliable data on our supply chains? Mm-hmm. Like, how are we capturing provable data on our supply chains? And these, like, claims that are being made, and as we shorten supply chains and trust becomes a much bigger issue, it's going to be the question of how do you use technology to not just revolutionize the way those things happen, but think about full revolution. So not just evolution, but full revolution, mm-hmm, of these types of supply chains. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, I know I talked a lot about that, but it is something that's been going through my mind, and I've seen more and more and more of it in the past few weeks. And so I'm excited to see where that goes next and see how people are responding, because it's definitely cool to see how companies are currently responding and how they're using their existing skills to bring forth newer products and newer ideas.
I think we're definitely going to come out of this a very different kind of business community. And I'm sure there's actually a lot of consumers that wish you had some sort of toilet paper production blockchain to track the movement of those, very precious item that I have yet to see in grocery stores again over the past couple of weeks. So.
I mean, like, imagine you could have, I think we want the opposite. We want someone to track who's hoarding.
Also, you know, that.
That is the other side of this, is like, where is the hoarders? Ultimately, what's going on right now?
I know, it's just so crazy because I was just thinking, like, you could track how many, like, I guess you could even pinpoint it down to like the number of sheets a grocery store have purchased at the beginning of a day, and then how much was sold, and then like divide that by their like customers within the time of that. Like, it would be too much to act for that one person to actually use. Like, you know, it would be that skewed because people are hoarding them, and it's absolutely insane. And I'm really glad I've not yet had the need to buy. There's also just so many missing things from, I feel like last time I've been to the grocery store, it's like, there's no celery. I'm like, I know people aren't hoarding celery, but I wonder, you know, what shipment was like missed, or, you know, where was that celery coming from, and where, in what part of the supply chain did that mean I can't make a salad with celery? Like, how did that?
The cool thing about this is I don't think people ever thought about supply chain like that. You know what I mean? I think this is highlighting the opportunity for, you know, where did the egg come from? Yeah. You know, where did the chicken come from? Because most of us just go to a grocery store and you always have all these options. But now that you, exactly that is celery. So where did this come from? And maybe that community is very terribly impacted that this source is coming from. And so how can we be helpful, right? How can you be the person that actually donates to the salary farmer, or, you know, help finance that salary farmer? How can we make that work? And these are things that blockchains enable, which is great. And specifically why we built the Topple blockchain is to enable, you know, companies to do things that previously weren't possible to be done, right? Like being able to show where that came from. And then at the same time, how do you help that source? And I think that's what I'm excited about, is people thinking through supply chains now. People thinking through, like, where, why, like, where does this shipment come from? Like, people thinking a little bit further than their grocery stores right now. And that is sad that we haven't before. Like, most of us are just very used to that. But I think it is going to help a lot in the next generation of track and trace. And then validate in our supply chains, which I'm very excited about. So, it's a good time for us to be building the technology that powers all of this opportunity. But it is difficult times. I mean, like, I have to acknowledge, it is, as we said in the beginning, unprecedented. And we need to think through, how do you make it work in these times? But I'm excited to see, like, what's going to happen going forward. Yeah. I mean, I think virtual offices are going to be real.
Yes. Well, I want to talk about, because I know something you're really passionate about and kind of Topple's origin story is kind of to track and to have this impact component. And so I wonder, I think a lot about sustainability, and I wonder, is in light of COVID-19, our sustainability and that impact kind of falling to the wayside while we're all just trying to, you know, survive? You know, I think about one thing, for instance, I think about all the people taking out food to go versus eating in a restaurant, or, you know, grocery shopping and having all of the bags and all of the waste. Do you feel like people are thinking now less about sustainability and more just about being able to work remotely and feed their families?
I actually think more people are cooking than they were before, to be honest.
That's very true.
So that might be a good thing. And I actually think what I've seen just in general is more interaction and value of interaction via, like, video call. Like, I've seen, even when I talk to my team now, they are not on their phones. But to bring us back to wastefulness and survival mode and thinking through, you know, the future, I think one of the biggest things that we might come out of in this time, and I've thought about it a lot, is the question of, people might be asking exactly that, is why is this not first priority? You know, as you have all this trash now, why shouldn't I be caring about recycling? Because if we're just going to make the problems worse, there's actually a really, really good article that compares, like, the pandemic of COVID-19 with the slow killing of the planet, right? So it's kind of this thing of, if we're not going to do social distancing, if we're not going to actually react as a human race from a sustainability perspective, we might see the same exact issue happen, where it becomes a, you know, we can't even drink clean water. We can't even, you know, because that's the thing, is, like, trash ends up in our water, which ends up in our stomachs, right? So it's kind of those things of, when I say people need to think through supply chains, I think very much anything is a supply chain. And I think people need to go think through their own usages of goods and products. And I think this might push us in the other direction. Yes, people are in survival mode, but I also feel that there's a responsibility, not just from our side as consumers, but also as a responsibility from the grocery store side, is to not give us, you know, all these plastic bags and have all these packaging and have us have to, you know, throw so much stuff away. Like the takeout, for instance, I mean, there's like 20 different packages for one takeout. Mm-hmm. And I think those are things that we can start questioning. I think we are in an information generation where a lot of this, you're probably reading some of this too. You're seeing this in the news. And I would like to see where this goes with regards to, like, our generation. Mm-hmm. That's the other part of this. I think we are in a generation that hasn't really seen a, you know, massive global impact such like this. And I think there might be a lot more questioning of why things are happening and how things are happening, and less, you know, just, oh, everything's great and awesome and we're moving forward. It might be a generation that really wants to make a change in this world so that these things don't happen again. So how could we have tracked some of what happened? How could we have, you know, prevented some of what happened? I think that's just where my mind goes on all of this is, I think people might become more conscious. I don't think people are just going to not throw away or not be wasteful right now, because I don't think all the right systems or processes are in place for people to be less wasteful. For instance, like, you know, recycling, not picking up. I mean, that's not my fault that, like, I'm still recycling, but now my recycling trash bin is already so full. What happens? Right. So it kind of is the question of, do we really have all the right processes in place in this world, or are we faking it right now?
Yeah.
And we are just hurting the planet every day. I think that's the question that might come up, is like, oh, okay, so we don't have time to recycle during these types of times, but are we then really recycling? Mm-hmm. Do we really have a sustainable process for recycling in place? Yeah. I mean, yeah, these are philosophical ideas and questions that we can ask, but I think they're good to think through. But I mean, if you can't make a difference, then you should probably spend time on things you can make a difference on. Yeah. Doesn't mean you shouldn't think about that.
Well, and I think crisis will drive innovation. I think Hurricane Harvey, just being in Houston, I saw a couple startups come out of, you know, here's a bag you can put your car in that can be water resistant up to 6 feet. Or, you know, here's an inflatable, auto inflatable barrier to prevent your house from flooding. Like, these types of innovations that came out of that, I'm very interested to see what type of technology and innovation comes out of this time, because I think that we'll definitely see some in the very near future.
Yeah, I'm very much looking
forward to the medical center.
Yeah, that's what I'm actually looking forward to see what the med center is going to do.
Yeah.
You know, out of this, one of the things before I started my PhD at Rice, I actually worked at Rice for the Institute for Global Health. Mm-hmm. And one of the first products that they had was the Pumani, which is a bubble CPAP machine. Mm-hmm. And what they did is, we, as the students at Rice, would essentially take some of these technologies that are very expensive in the U.S., take them to Malawi, Tanzania, Nigeria, and think through, like, how do you make these technologies more robust and how do you scale them up to work in these areas? And so out of that came Pumani, the bubble CPAP machine, which is, I think the cost is like $400, $500 instead of like $5,000 mm-hmm. for this machine. And right now, like, everywhere, in every hospital, we're missing ventilators. We need CPAP machines. And so I'm constantly thinking through, like, you know, what's Rice 360 going to do about this? Maybe I should ping them and say, I just challenged you in a podcast.
Well, they did. They do have a student and a student professor, I guess, team that worked with a Canadian company to create basically a 3D printed device that can, there's auto, like, hand ventilators that in emergency situations doctors can use, but there's a technology that basically can replace the hand movement of squeezing that ventilator. So that's coming out of Rice. So you can challenge them. I think they've already accepted the challenge. And it just is something that is so much more low cost to create, and definitely something that can be used, you know, in emergency situations like this. And also just a solution for emergency responders who can't keep up that, like, manual
movement. Oh, yes.
So yeah, it's very cool stuff. And like I said, we're already seeing those types of innovations. So there's just more to come, which is kind of an exciting way to look at the silver lining of the situation. Obviously, there's still a lot of question marks, but already to be able to see some of the silver linings coming out of this is good to keep us going.
No, agreed. And I think we have to. I have a whole different view coming from a developing country. Yeah. I also see the world a little bit differently than most. And I think one of the things that for me, relative to where South Africa is right now and where the US is in the same situation, and having an opportunity for small businesses to, you know, have stimulus opportunity to actually have like an SBA loan and, you know, opportunities like that, for me as a founder coming from a developing world, I just say, hey, like, at least I can survive here, right? Like, that's one of the biggest things for me is to watch developed versus developing world right now and say, okay, in relative terms, I have it way better than founders in my own country. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I have the responsibility while I'm here to make the best of this current opportunity I still have, regardless of the situation we're both facing. Mm-hmm. So I kind of have a minor responsibility, or maybe it feels a little bit big for me, but it's to you know, use the opportunities we have and not be fearful of the future, because I think everyone is kind of being this like daunting future, and I'm like, well, I mean, being a startup founder is daunting. Yeah. So let's just go back 5 steps and say, well, it's daunting regardless, and everyone is in the same space, including your competition right now. Yeah. So it's the question, and I'm also an athlete, as you know. I was a heptathlete as an undergrad. I came to the US on a track and field scholarship. And so as an athlete, I also say, well, you and I are training at the same level, and mm-hmm. I need to move quick and move fast. And my dad would always, when I was a small kid, like come pull my toes and say, right now it's 5 a.m. Your competition is training. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And so I think for me, it's just thinking through that type of grit that needs to be used right now, that you don't have control about the uncertainty. No one has. But what do you have control over right now? And how can you act on that type of control? I think that's where my focus has been. So when you, like the earlier question you asked me about what keeps me up at night, what keeps me up at night is what can I control? And I think that's the most important thing right now, is the things I can control, I need to be focused on, and the things I can't are just ideas and fictions of ideas and unnecessary, daunting things to face right now.
Well, I think a lot of startup founders really needed to hear that. So I really appreciate coming on the podcast and offering your very unique perspective, because like I said, it's something a lot of people probably needed to hear and wanted to hear. So thank you again, and congratulations on transitioning into CEO and your many, many degrees, finally getting those.
Yes, finally using them for something.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks again. Stay sane, working from home, and healthy, of course.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Please consider hitting subscribe, sharing with a friend, or giving us 5 stars. Tune in next week with another episode.